Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of RPG Blueprints. In this episode, I do a deep dive on my Dress for User class for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, inspired by Final Fantasy X-2. I'll explain my thought processes behind the design. Enjoy! Another episode of RPG Blueprints. I'm really excited today to talk about my Dress for User D&D class. I went back sort of thinking of it as early spring cleaning. It's been bothering me that I left it in a pretty finished, but still as far as where I wanted it to be, unfinished state. So I went back. I fleshed out all of the dress spheres that I thought were appropriate. So out of the base game, all of the dress spheres are included, except for, like I said, it's the base game. So the psychic and festivalist aren't included. The special dress spheres are not included because they're unique to Riku, Pain, and Yuna. And in that same vein, for that reason, I didn't include the trainer or mascot dress spheres. Just because if you know how the game works, they're all specific to each of those characters. And I didn't want dress spheres where you have to make selections from or to pick one specific version of the three to model it after, because you already have enough choice between the 11 other dress spheres. You're picking four of these 11, so you have a lot of versatility with this class. As a reminder, there should be a link in the show notes or on Twitter for the PDF if you want to follow along as I'm going through this and explaining it. So in addition to the dress spheres that I added, I also added one more garment grid. If I were to add anything to this later, it would probably be more garment grids, but I'm going to talk when I get to them about why garment grid modeling as far as like how these features work for the dress for user. It's a little complicated taking the mechanics and making them into D&D features. So that's why there's only two for now. It's the way this class is designed. The dress spheres are more like traditional subclasses anyways, and the garment grids are just sort of like flavor on top, like a little additional bonuses. So I think ultimately when you're playing, like, you're not going to think, oh, I don't have a lot of choice between these subclasses, because there's so much choice within the class itself. Because it's been like a year since I originally did this and talked about it with Nicole for our Final Fantasy X and X-2 episodes, I'm just going to go over some of the basics just to get everyone up to speed. And then I'm going to just sort of go through my design decisions for the different dress spheres. So starting right at level 1, you pick one dress sphere out of the 11. And you have access automatically to your dress sphere ability basic. So it's either a passive sort of ability that's always in effect, or just something you have at will that you always have access to. You also, at level 3, that's when you choose your garment grid. At level 5, you get your second dress sphere and the ability to change between them. At level 7, you get your Dress for Your Ability minor. So that's the one that's sort of still like not as strong as your obviously higher level Dress for Your Abilities, but it's the one that you have access to the most besides the basic. You end up having quite a number of uses. You have in total a number equal to twice your proficiency bonus. So that's 12 uses by 20th level, if I remember correctly. Yes. So quite a number of uses. And right from 7th level, you have 2 dress spheres. So you already have access to 2 basics and 2 minors. At level 9, you get a garment grid improvement, so a little more use out of that. At 10th level, you get your 3rd dress sphere. And so that means that you have access to 3 basics and 3 minors. At level 11, you get your medium ability. And then at 15, you get your 4th and final dress sphere. As a reminder, at 5th, 10th, and 15th level, you're able to swap the dress spheres out if you realize your character is going in a direction that you didn't originally intend. Kind of like spell swapping that some of the other classes get. At level 17, you get your 3rd and final garment grid improvement. At level 18, you get your major dress sphere ability. And at 20th level, you get your ultimate dress sphere ability, which you only have 1 use of for every long rest. And that's because they are quite powerful. But also keep in mind that you'll always have access to 4, right? Through your dress sphere changing. So you're always able to be useful, like no matter what the situation. That was sort of like the intention of this class. I tried to model it sort of looking at power levels of similar spell effects of similar levels, but also wanted to keep it not quite at that level because one, it works a little differently and you don't have necessarily the same limitations that other spellcasting classes have. But also I didn't want to like step on any toes and make certain things irrelevant. Like, for example, I didn't want the white mage dress sphere to make like to be super overpowered with healing and make having any other source of healing in your party irrelevant. I tried to keep it with some unique mechanics that you don't find in other classes, but sort of have like a certain Final Fantasy flavor. So let's go through the dress spheres. So starting with Alchemist, its basic is Chemist. So any sort of healing potion or consumable is doubled in effect. So you get double the healing, or say you have like a potion of giant strength that lasts a minute, it'll last 2 minutes. And that's whether you yourself use it or you administer it on someone else. The minor ability is Mix, which is sort of the most iconic part of the Alchemist, because it's Riku's Final Fantasy X special ability, where you mix 2 items for like a special effect. But doing a whole chart and like knowing what items might come up in any certain D&D game didn't seem reasonable to me. So what I decided is that as a bonus action, you can use 2 consumable items at once. So not only does it, make you better at using items because it's a bonus action, But you're also able to use two at once. So, like, better than even rogues getting their use item as a bonus action. But, like, very specifically, like, consumable items. One of the types of abilities that alchemists get in Final Fantasy X-2 are called the stash, like the stash series of actions. And so basically it's like always having access to items without consuming items. So the medium is called stash, potion, and ether. And if you know anything about Final Fantasy, potion heals HP, ether heals MP, your magic points. So I used that. So basically you can use this ability to heal 50 hit points from yourself or anything in touch range. And your target can also choose expended spell slots to recover. But it can't have a combined level of spell slots that you can regain is equal to half your Sphere Hunter level. And that's rounded up, just to be a little more generous. At 11th level, that means that you can do a total of 6 levels, but you can't regain anything higher than 4th. Because I wanted it to be... I modeled this after the wizard ability to regain spell slots, but I didn't want it to be as good, so I just nerfed it a little bit from that. The major, which keep in mind this is at 18th level, so pretty high level, is Phoenix Down. And if you know Final Fantasy, Phoenix Down is the resurrection item. So it's kind of like having access to a revivify, but it doesn't consume diamonds. And I thought this was pretty fair because, again, it has that limitation of having to be used within 10 minutes. And it's 18th level. So usually by that level, you have like someone that has some access to this. Like, it's not a true resurrection or anything. And it is pretty limited. So, I mean, you can reach out to me and let me know what you think, if that's too overpowered, but I think for 18th level, it should be fine. And then finally, 20th level is Stash Elixir. And just like in Final Fantasy, it is the full heal, like full HP MP. So, you can use this on yourself or a creature within touch range, and you heal it up to its maximum hit points. In addition, they gain the benefits of a long rest, except they do not gain back the use of the feature Dress for Your Action Ultimate. So the only caveat is that you can't have like two alchemists using their ultimate back and forth, fully healing, like forever. That was the one stipulation. But other than that, like, imagine like a really tough fight and your wizard is like down to its last spell slot, and then you pop an elixir on them and they're back to all their full craziness. Like, I feel like it's a tide turning ability, really powerful. But again, like, you can only do that on one person once per long rest. So I think that, again, I should stop saying it so you don't hear me say it, but I think it's balanced. But that's obviously, I did try to keep these rather in line. Yeah, so that's Alchemist. The only other thing that I want to note is that they do get gun proficiency, because that is the weapon that they use in the game. So I wanted to make sure that that was reflected. Okay, so second we've got Berserker, which I did have before, but I don't think I talked about it originally. Basically, it's all about counters and powerful hits. So the basic feature is counter. So when you're using the Berserker Dress Sphere, if you're ever damaged by something within melee range, you can use your reaction to make a melee weapon attack. So it's kind of like a attack of opportunity, but they have to do any sort of damage to you. So, so that's the basic concept of the Berserker. The minor at 7th level, they can use their minor action to replace a melee attack, and then that attack roll is made with a -5, but the damage is increased by 10. And that's basically how Mad Rush works in the game. It's less accurate, but more powerful. The medium at 11th level is called Crackdown, and you can use it as a bonus action. So when you hit a creature with a melee attack, you can force that creature to make a charisma saving throw, and on a failed save, one beneficial spell affecting the target ends, or they lose concentration on a spell, in that order. So like if they don't have any beneficial spells affecting them, then they'll lose concentration. But if they have like haste or mage armor or something on them, that will be dispelled first. The major at 18th level, it's pretty strong. You can use your dress sphere action as a bonus, the major as a bonus action to heal yourself. So for a minute, you heal 2d12 at the end of each of your turns, even if you're unconscious. So can't keep a good berserker down. 20th level, the ultimate is called Berserk. So you can use your Dress Sphere action ultimate as a bonus action to enter a fury for a minute. Sounds a little familiar to barbarians, I know, but it is a little different. So until the effect ends, you can use the counter feature without using up your reaction for the round. Additionally, the only action you may perform is the attack action, and all melee actions are made with a +5 to attack and damage. So that sort of represents when the status Berserk in Final Fantasy is used. All the targeted character can do is attack, and they're stronger. But it also folds in sort of better counters that you get in 10-2 as you level up the class. Okay, so next we've got Black Mage. So Black Mage is the second longest entry because they have access to a lot of spells per tier. So for example, basic Blizzard, Fire, Thunder, the classic trio. So when you're using Black Mage Dress Sphere, you've got access to these three cantrips. And basically, they're just specific, cantrips that do, cold damage, fire damage, and thunder damage. They work a little different, but all you need to know is that you can actually, replace any attack with the cantrips. And the only reason why that's, good is that the class gets extra attack, one extra attack. So that means that once you get that extra attack, when you're in the Black Mage Dress Sphere, my intention, so starting at 6th level, that's when you get extra attack. So the Black Mage will be able to shoot off, two of these cantrips, in a turn. And that's sort of like their like special thing. Again, the damage levels are very average, normal cantrip, but they get to do two of them. And the other thing is that they don't have the same sort of They don't have the extra effects that other cantrips have. So, for example, Blizzard does cold damage, but unlike Frostbite, it doesn't have any sort of disadvantage on weapon attack rolls. So it's just basic damage. So that's where I was kind of at with it, because the Black Mage in most Final Fantasy games, it's just about pure spell damage. The minor at 7th level is Focus, which in 10-2, that's a skill that they get, and it increases their magic power. So as a bonus action, you can focus your thoughts and magical ability until the end of your next turn. All magic damage that you deal is increased by an additional damage die. Again, it's just about being a big hitter. So again, I think you can see where this is going. So a lot of this is just about racking up big damage. Like an average turn, you could do focus as a bonus action and then take the attack action for two attacks, which you replace with, say, thunder and fire. Each of those cantrips is boosted by an additional damage die. Something that I didn't go over because I was going over the very core parts of this, but starting at 13th level, you get chaining, which is part of Final Fantasy X-2 combat. Basically, if you attack close enough in time, because it is a real-time game, there's a damage multiplier. So chaining works by if a creature's already been damaged within your turn, all subsequent sources of damage increase by a damage die. So starting at 13th level, you're doing focus. You can do two cantrips. And the first one's going to be increased by one damage die for focus. The second one will be increased by two damage die, one for focus and one for training. So that's the mentality for this class, just big damage. Starting at 11th level, your medium is Blizzara, Fyra, Thundara, your level 2 magics. You can replace any attack with any of these three spells. So it does have the same sort of stipulation of replacing attacks, but keep in mind that one, they're your medium dress for your action, so you do have limited uses of them, unlike the basic cantrips. And two, it does follow regular spell rules where you can only cast one leveled spell per turn. So you can only cast Blizzara, Fyra, and Thundara once in the turn, but you can do an additional cantrip. And basically, these three are a little bit more different. The cantrips are all sort of single target pure damage spells, but these ones have different shapes. Basically, Blizzara is a cylinder. A blizzard, like a focused blizzard coming down from a cloud. Fyra is a sphere, like an explosion, and Thundara is a spell attack, and every creature within 20 feet of that, they all get hit. Or you make a spell attack against every creature within 20 feet of one target. So that's why, starting at the level 2, the medium, they start getting a little bit different. The major at 18th level is Blizzaga, Fyraga, Thundaga, which is the level 3. And so these just have a much bigger range. Again, it's a cylinder, a point, and an attack roll. Whereas because the Thundaga attack range is increased a little bit, I just made it a dexterity saving throw, so one person isn't rolling all the attack rolls. And then they all have like a little extra effect on top of that. The ultimate ability is Ultima. I thought that was appropriate. And Ultima in Final Fantasy is often like a big laser beam. You can basically create a 100-foot long, 20-foot wide, 20-feet tall beam within 500 feet, and everyone makes an intelligence saving throw or takes 12d12 force damage, ignoring all resistance, because, again, that's part of Ultima, ignoring resistance. Yeah, and that's Black Mage, just big damage. Next we have Dark Knight, which is one of my new ones that I didn't already have created. Your basic is Darkness. If you know anything about Final Fantasy, that is the skill that is like intrinsically linked with Dark Knight. You sacrifice your health to do bigger damage than normal. And so specifically how it works, you give up 1d8 hit points. And all creatures within 10 feet of you make a dexterity saving throw, and if they fail, they take 2d8 necrotic damage. The minor is Bio, and Bio varies game to game. In 10-2, it poisons, so that's what it does here. You use your action to... You make a 10-foot radius sphere within 60 feet of you, and each creature makes a constitution saving throw, and then they're poisoned until they're healed of it or after a short or long rest. So it might seem like a bit of a weaker effect, but the poison won't just fade after a minute. So anytime... There was something that was a little more basic. I tried to twist it just a little, just again, to separate it out from other similar effects that you might find in base D&D. The medium at 11th level is Break. And in Final Fantasy, Break causes Petrify. Perfect. We've got Petrify in Dungeons & Dragons. So you use your action to choose a creature within 30 feet of you. They make a constitution saving throw or they become petrified. That's it. It is a pretty strong ability, so I didn't really want to do much with it other than that. Black Sky is the major. And basically it's just like meteors falling from the sky, so that's what I made it. And this, keep in mind, this is an 18th level ability, so you choose 10 points within 120 feet of you. Each creature within a 5-foot cube of those points must attempt a dexterity saving throw for each cube they are inside, so you can stack them all up on one person. And then they got to make 10 separate saving throws, or you can spread them out. And then they take 3d6 magical bludgeoning damage for each. So you could be taking 30d6, so a total of 180 magical bludgeoning damage. The ultimate, death. Just like what it sounds like. Death causes, like, your instant death to an enemy. So, basically, you choose a creature that you can see within 60 feet of you, and they have to save on a charisma saving throw, or its total hit points become zero. Notice how I worded that. It does not deal damage. It cannot be prevented. The hit point total just becomes zero. But it has no effect on a creature with legendary actions, because I did not want this to be abused as like some sort of like boss killer. Like it's not meant for that. So that's Dark Knight. Pretty scary. Next up we got Gun Mage, which is another new one. Originally when I did it, I kind of avoided it because I was like, oh, this is a little complicated, but I think what I came up with is a pretty good sort of compromise of a lot of ideas that I had. So the basic is scan. That is very basic with the Gun Mage in 10.2. If you're not aware, the Gun Mage is kind of the blue mage that you'd see in other Final Fantasies. Basically, it's your monster mage. So they've got the scan that can give you the stats about the ability, the weaknesses, and that. And then they can take their abilities to use for themselves. So scan, when you use it, you use it on something within 60 feet. There's no save or anything. You just like use your action to do this. And then your DM, you can ask them either a condition immunity, an elemental vulnerability, an elemental weakness, an elemental immunity, or the creature type. And your DM will give you a new answer each time you use this feature, and if there are no more to reveal with scan after each use. So basically, you know, they'll say, oh, they're immune to stun. And then they'll say, okay, you know everything about this. And yeah, so I didn't want it to be able to tell you everything because I think that sort of discovery and trial and error is part of it's part of the game. It's part of D&D. And so if you were to just have all the information with one action, I feel like would be kind of bogus. So it's sort of a risk reward. You got to use up your action every time to get something new about your enemies. So the minor ability, I chose absorb, and that's one of the monster abilities. I toyed with the idea of like having to defeat enemies and actually get them, but then again, just like I didn't want to do trainer, I didn't want to do mascot, I said we're simplifying this, and I just picked some of the monster abilities that I thought would be useful. And are kind of emblematic of the gun or blue mage. So absorb deals has a creature again lose hit points. It cannot be reduced because it's just hit point loss, and you regain that same amount of hit points. But if they fail the save, you regain the use of your Dress for Your Action minor. The reason why I did that is because absorb not only heals, steals HP, but it also steals MP in the game. So that was I wanted to shove it down, give it just 2d8 hit points. It's not a lot. But you can end up like just keep using it. So I think that hit a pretty good power level. When it successfully saves, it still deals damage, you still heal, but you don't get the use back, and it's only 1d8 hit points. So that's absorb. The medium is Fiend Hunter, and Fiend Hunter is sort of a whole set of skills in Final Fantasy X-2, and basically you learn a separate skill for each type of enemy there is. And again, I went back and forth on like different ways to do this, but what I landed on is basically every time you use it, you state a creature type, and then you make a ranged attack against a creature, and if you've correctly identified that enemy's type, then it bypasses all resistance and deals an additional 3 dice of weapon damage. So there's obviously there you can see there's synergy between Scan and Fiend Hunter. That way, someone who doesn't know the monster manual inside and out isn't necessarily penalized because they have a way to learn what the creature type is. Yeah, and it's just it is just a powerful hit. The major 18th level is White Wind. White Wind is another pretty iconic and often occurring skill in Final Fantasy games. In different ways, different games, it works a little bit differently. How it works, what I've done is you summon a cylinder of healing wind, and every creature within that cylinder regains health equal to a quarter of your maximum hit points. And it also cures blinded, charmed, deafened, frightened, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, stunned, and will be awoken from magical sleep. So that's generally how White Wind either heals like equal to or like some sort of relation to your own health. And in 10-2, it also heals from status. So I just went a little nuts. And speaking of status, the ultimate 20th level Bad Breath, also another iconic skill from Final Fantasy. Bad Breath is the skill from the Malboro enemies, which are like these multi-tentacled, multi-eyed, sort of viney-looking, big-mouthed monsters, and they always have a skill called Bad Breath, where they, like, have this stinky burp that does a bunch of status on your whole party, usually. This skill creates a 30-foot cone, and everything in it makes a constitution saving throw. If you fail, they are blinded, poisoned, deafened, and under the effect of the slow spell, and also they're unable to cast spells for a minute, because normally it does silence, but silence isn't necessarily a thing, so I just called it out and said you can't cast spells for a minute. But if you successfully save, creatures are blinded, deafened, and poisoned. So even if you fail, it's still a good debuff. And that's, I don't know if this is underpowered, but I think that the ability to stop someone from casting spells for a minute itself is a pretty like 20th level ability. That's where my mind was at with that. Next, we have Gunner, which is something that I had before, and I did talk about, so I'm going to go through this kind of quick. Your basic is enchanted ammo, so all ranged attacks made with a one-handed ammunition weapon gain a +1 to damage and attack rolls and are considered magical for the sake of overcoming resistance. Just sort of a basic little ability, always good. Your minor is scattershot. You basically get to make, like, for one action, you make a ranged attack against all creatures within a 20-foot cone. Then your medium is burst shot, and it's sort of if you hit, no matter what you rolled, it counts as a critical hit. And if you did roll a 20, then you get an additional damage die in your normal crit. Trigger happy, which is sort of the most iconic part of the Gunner in 10-2, where it has this sort of little meter that counts down, and you mash one of the R buttons to hit as much as you can. And so to recreate that, basically you use your action, and then you can make a ranged attack with your gun against one creature within range, and you can continually keep making ranged attacks until either you miss or until the target hit point reaches zero. So it could be like an instant, like you pull this out at the beginning of a boss fight, boom 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 boom, if you get lucky enough, just done. But that is an 18th level ability, so yeah, good luck. The ultimate, the 20th level, is Scatterburst, and basically it is a combination of Scattershot and Burst Shot. So it is a 30-foot cone, and every hit counts as a critical hit, and every natural 20 gets an additional damage die. Yeah, big damage on that one. So that's that. Now, Lady Luck. Lady Luck is a dress sphere that I did have sort of written out, but Lady Luck has Lady Luck has a set of skills called reels, like a slot reels. And so you have a lot of different possible effects with all of them. And I did not end up going through and writing the description for all of these effects. So I don't think anyone in the last year has actually used these in a D&D game. And so I didn't feel too bad about not explaining that. But now it's there, fully able to be used. At the end of the Lady Luck section is just the real description. And so whenever you're playing this and you're rolling your effect, you can just go look alphabetically and find what you got. A lot of them do end up, which is, it's also how it works in 10-2, recreate effects from other, like skills from other classes. And then some are unique to the reels themselves. So starting with your basic is called two dice, which is a skill that they've got in the game. And basically it rolls two dice and does damage based on the dice rolled. So in this, I made it a little cantrip. Basically, you roll 2d6. After making a ranged spell attack against a creature, and then the creature will take two separate hits of force damage equal to the pip value on the die. But if they're equal, each hit is doubled in damage. The minor is attack and magic reel, so you have access to both sets of slots. As an action, you're going to roll 3d8 and then consult the table of whatever you chose. You do have to say, oh, I'm using attack reels, I'm using magic reels, at least before you do it. But when you roll your 3d8, you can choose any combination of them. You don't, you know, have to say this one is slot one, this one is slot two, this one is slot three, because towards the end, you've got certain combinations that only need doubles, or if you roll any one two, you can at least do something. I'm not going to go through every effect. Just know the attack reels are generally more physical stuff. The magic reels are magic stuff. There's some beneficial magic, some healing magic, and there's some damaging and debilitating magic there too. The medium dress sphere skill is four dice, so it's similar to the two dice cantrip, but this time so basically you choose a sphere, like you choose a point within 120 feet, and then every creature within that 30-foot sphere radius, it's a big radius, they make a dexterity saving throw. And then out of all of the targets that failed, you're going to randomly determine which ones are targets. You're going to roll 1d6 for each random selection. And then each target takes force damage equal to four times the number rolled. If all the dice roll the same number, you double the damage. So it's going to be eight times the number on the die. And if all numbers are one, instead deal 100 force damage to each of the four targets. Which is only there because two dice in the game actually has it. But I thought doing something crazy for a cantrip did not make sense, so I guess I kind of nerfed the D&D version of it, but the four dice is more true to the game. I thought it was okay because rolling four ones is pretty statistically unlikely. So when it shows up, it's just going to be a cool thing. The major at 18th level is Tantalize. And so I made it work kind of like how Confusion, like I based it on the Confusion spell. So every creature that you can see within 100 feet makes a Wisdom saving throw. And if they fail, they're charmed by you for a minute. And while charmed by this effect, a creature must roll a d10 at the start of each of its turns to determine its behavior for that turn. On a 1, uses all its movement to move in a random direction, 2 to 6, doesn't move or take actions, 7 to 8, uses its action to make a melee attack against a randomly determined creature within its reach. And if it doesn't have anything of it in its reach, it does nothing. 9 to 10, and a creature can act and move normally. But keep in mind that they are still charmed by you. So even if they can act and move normally, at least that's still in effect. At the end of each of its turns, they can make a Wisdom saving throw. And if it succeeds, the effect ends for that target. 20th level. The ultimate is Random Reels. So basically, it's just like you don't know what's on this. Like it could be an item effect. It could be a physical magic effect, including Congrats, which normally is like an instant win of a random battle in Final Fantasy. And this, it creates a pile of 1,000 gold instantly, and you regain all of your hit points. So, I just thought that that was like a fun way to sort of get the spirit of congrats from the game, like instantly winning a battle. But also there's no way in D&D to just say you instantly win the encounter. Like that doesn't, like all of your enemies are unconscious. Like what does that mean? Like it's different for every encounter. So I couldn't really recreate that, but I couldn't not have congrats be the top result for random reels. Yeah, so then I've got the whole list of all the effects, and then we come up on Samurai. So Samurai has some physical moves and works a little bit different than like a straight fighter or the Samurai-like fighter subclass. I forget what it's called right now. So the basic is Mirror of Equity, how it works in Final Fantasy is basically the lower life you have, the greater damage it deals. When you're using the Samurai Dress Sphere, when you're making a melee weapon attack, it's really only worth using when you're at half or below. So when you're below half, you deal an extra 1d8 with your weapon attack. And if you are below a quarter, it deals an extra 2d10 instead. Which is really nice for having that starting. Keep in mind, this is starting at level 1, so if you're sort of put on your back foot really early, your enemies are going to regret it. They're not going to expect an extra 2d10 from something so squishy as a level 1 character. Starting at 7th level, you get the Minor Dismissal. So you can make a melee weapon attack against a creature within your reach. And if they're casting a spell or concentrating on a spell, it takes double damage from the attack. And if it makes a concentration attack, it makes it at disadvantage. Yeah, so basically in 10-2, because it's sort of an action term, like a in between a turn based and an action system, you have these, some actions like a basic attack will go off instantly, and some actions like casting a spell you have to charge up, and if something's charging up an attack, dismissal will sort of interrupt that. So that was my way of sort of showing that. or recreating that. The medium at 11th level for samurai is clean slate. So you can use your action to roll one of your hit dice. You regain double the amount rolled, and you also heal from all conditions except exhaustion. Your major at 18th level is nonpareil. I think that's how you pronounce it. So as a bonus action, you can focus with it, and for the next minute, all weapon attacks and damage rolls receive a bonus equal to your proficiency bonus. So it's just a buff to do more damage. And then the ultimate, Shinzen Tetsu. So normally this is like a enemy party wide, like one hit kill move. But obviously that wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. What it is you make a weapon attack against any creature within your reach. And then every target that you hit has to make a constitution saving throw. If they save, they take damage equal to your weapon attack damage plus 3d10. But if they failed, they immediately drop to zero hit points. So it's not like a party wide thing. They have to be, you know, generally within 5 feet of you. I tried to make it a little more balanced than just being like anything you can see immediately drops to zero hit points. So then we got Songstress, which I did have before as well, but we didn't really talk about it. So Songstress, the basic is Darkness Dance, and basically you can keep up a dance, and anything that fails a constitution saving throw is blinded while you dance. But if you say, if something saves, then they're immune to it for an hour. The minor is Battle Cry or Esoteric Melody. In the games, they're a physical attack buff or a magic attack buff. So that's what it is here too. If you use Battle Cry, then all creatures of your choice within 60 feet that can hear you add 1d8 to their next weapon attack or spell attack if it's Esoteric Melody within the next 10 minutes. And you can stack this up to 3 times. So if you use this action and a character didn't end up using their weapon attack, then and then you use it again, then they're going to get 2d8 on their next weapon attack, or again 3d8. The medium at 11th level is Dirty Dancing, and basically how that works is in Final Fantasy X-2, all hits are critical, but critical hits in D&D are A, less common, and B, more powerful. They mean more. What I said is, again, the dances can be, as an action, chosen to be continued. Kind of like a Witch Bolt. And as long as you're dancing, all your allies get critical hits on 18 to 20. The major at 18th level is Matador's Song and Perfect Pitch. And in the game, Matador's Song makes you more evasive, and Perfect Pitch increases your allies' accuracy. Matador's Song adds 4 to AC, or Perfect Pitch adds 4 to attack rolls for the next 10 minutes. And unlike the minor Battle Cry and Esoteric Melody, it's not a one-time thing. It's just a buff that lasts 10 minutes. But it doesn't stack. Your ultimate is Magical Mask. So once you reach 20th level, you can do this dance, and you can continue it again without using any additional use. But while you keep it up, you and all allies within 60 feet are immune to all sources of magical damage. So whether that's a spell or just a magical effect, it's magical immunity. I think that's a appropriate 20th level ability. And that is Songstress. So Thief was one of the ones that we covered in the original episode. So just going through quickly, Quick Strikes is the basic, and you make an additional attack as a free action anytime you make a weapon attack against a target. Your minor is Mug, and basically whenever you attack, you can attempt to steal something, an item that is carried but not worn. I said subject to the DM's approval because, I mean, I don't know how weird people can get with that, but I just want to stick that little disclaimer in. Pilfer Health is the medium at 11th level, and basically it's a bonus action that all your melee weapon damage turns to health for you. Steel Will at 18th level, when you hit with an attack, you can force your target to make a wisdom saving throw, and if they fail, they are going to run away from you with their reaction, and they're frightened of you for 1 minute, which basically recreates the effect of an enemy fleeing. And Borrowed Time, at 20th level, you're going to hit with a weapon attack and force a wisdom saving throw, and then they are frozen in time for a minute, so they are effectively paralyzed. And on the end of each of their turns, they can reattempt a saving throw to break free from it. Okay, Warrior is new. So Warrior has these different physical elemental skills in 10-2. So that's what your basic is. So basically, whenever you make a melee weapon attack as a warrior, you can choose to deal fire, cold, or lightning damage instead of the normal damage type. But it doesn't count as magical damage. So that's just something that's kind of cool with a warrior, kind of unique, I think. The minor at 7th level is Power Break, Armor Break, Magic Break, and Mind Break. And Power and Armor, when you make an attack, you're going to force a Strength saving throw, and Magic and Mind Break, you're forcing an Intelligence saving throw. Power Break makes that character deal 1d8 less damage with weapon attacks. Armor Break receives 1d8 more damage with weapon attacks. Magic Break deals 1d8 less damage with spells and other magical effects. Mind Break takes 1d8 more damage from spells and other magical effects. Yeah, that's, again, standard sort of Final Fantasy abilities that I think that's a good way of recreating them in D&D. Delay Buster, which is sort of a unique sort of skill. It's more unique. I don't know if it shows up outside of Final Fantasy X and X-2, but basically it'll slow them down or make them lower in turn order type of thing. So how it works here, you can use your action to make a melee weapon attack, and if they hit, the target must make a constitution saving throw. On a failed save, the target will not act until after your next turn, changing its order and initiative. So it's like a whole round where they don't get to move. So it's kind of like a stun, but unlike a stun, it changes its order and initiative. So that can be like a huge sort of game changer, depending on how it's used. The major for warrior at 18th level is Excalibur. And so basically you're making a melee weapon attack. If it hits, you deal damage equal to 4 times your normal weapon damage plus an additional 2d10, and all damage from that feature is radiant and considered magical for the sake of overcoming resistance. Basically that's how it is in the game. It's just a powerful holy damage hit. And your ultimate at 20th level is Assault, which is a pretty cool skill in 10-2. Basically, it makes your whole party go sicko mode and beat the crap out of everyone. So in this, I made it so that you rally yourself and up to 2 creatures within 30 feet. They gain the following benefits. Resistance to all damage. Melee weapon attacks deal double damage. You gain an additional attack on each turn. An additional action on each turn. The action can only be used to take the attack, one weapon attack only. Dash, disengage, hide, or use an object action while under the effects of Assault. And a creature may not cast or concentrate on any spell, because Assault basically berserks your party. And so I wanted to recreate that. Finally, we have White Mage, the healer. The basic, when I was making this, I thought, well, I can't have a basic, which you can use all the time, be a heal, because that's sort of one of the core design philosophies of D&D, is that like healing has to have some cost. Like it can't be infinite. So Protect and Shell are your basic. And Protect in Final Fantasy, it raises your defense. Shell raises your magic defense. So basically you can only have either Protect or Shell in effect at a time. And it targets one creature, and then your target will gain +1 to AC with Protect for the next minute, or Shell will give +1 to saving throws for the next minute. Cure. So that's your minor at 7th level. And so the spell Cure basically... you target a creature within 30 feet, and then up to 4 other creatures within 5 feet of it all regain 2d4 hit points. Asuna, not really sure how that's pronounced, but starting at 11th level, that's your medium dress fear action, and it's a spell, and you target one creature. Just like in the game, it removes status effects. So it's going to remove blinded, charmed, deafened, frightened, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, stunned, and wake creatures up from magically induced sleep. So that's any one target within 60 feet. Kuraga is your major at 18th level. And so basically it's just a very strong cure. So within 100 feet, you choose up to 10 creatures, and they all regain 8d10 hit points. Not much to it, just a pure heal. And so the ultimate is full cure. So this is a very strong heal spell. You heal all conditions from a target, you heal it back to full hit points. And if your target is dead, but has not been dead for more than 10 minutes, and the soul is willing, the creature is restored to life with full hit points. It retains all diseases or curses when it has died. and does not return any missing body parts, but it will close up wounds. So this is a very powerful spell. Keep in mind that it is your ultimate. You can use it once per long rest. And once again, I wanted to have it have that 10-minute time limit, just like the other revive the Phoenix down that Alchemist gets. Yeah. So those are the 11 classes that I made for this. And now let's just talk garment grids for a minute. So garment grids in 10.2 are sort of this mechanic where you slot your dress spheres in. It determines what classes your each of your characters has access to. And within battle, you're able to switch on the fly. That's why dress sphere switching is a mechanic in this class. And that's part of the reason why I decided to take on the challenge to make it in the first place, because I thought that, like, that sort of changing your role mid-battle would be cool in D&D, because maybe outside of, like, druid and like polymorph and stuff like that, there isn't a whole lot of like drastic shifting yourself into something new. So the garment grids also have passive abilities usually stacked into them, and also they have these gates that are represented by these little colorful symbols. And as you pass by the gates, as you switch dress spheres, it unlocks like additional abilities. And sometimes it requires like 2 or 4 in order to activate. So that's sort of the general background that you need to know, like to understand what I've done with these. So I already talked about Mounted Assault. That was the first one that I did. And honestly, when I went through the list of dress spheres, it turns out that it's really the one that makes the most sense for D&D to try to recreate for what it gives you. So First Strike, Slow Proof, and Auto Haste are all features of the dress sphere in 10.2. And so First Strike is what you get at third level. You gain a +5 bonus to initiative, and then if an enemy would initiate a surprise round and you are not incapacitated, you roll initiative for that surprise round. So generally, like with that, you're almost always going to go first in a battle, or like you at least have a pretty high chance to. Slow Proof activates at 9th level, so you don't have any sort of restriction through non-magical difficult terrain. That's a little perk that's always in effect. And then when you use the sphere change action, you're under the effects of freedom of movement spell for 10 minutes, but you have to take a short or long rest to do it again. And so Slow Proof prevents the status slow in Final Fantasy. But I didn't think that really made a lot of sense to just specifically say you're not able to be slowed. So that's why I decided to give those other features instead. Finally, at 17th level, you're going to get Auto Haste. So Auto Haste is what it sounds like. You always have haste active on you, and it works similar to how it does in D&D. Basically, your speed is increased, so either you're getting turns more often in pure turn-based Final Fantasies, or in 10.2, because it's kind of real-time, your turn just comes up more often, and like your bar fills up faster. So Auto Haste is one of those ones where you have to pass by the gates. So starting at 17th level, whenever you use the sphere change feature to change into all 4 of your dress spheres within a span of 10 minutes, you're under the effects of haste spell for 1 minute. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest. So I wanted, for the freedom of movement and haste, I wanted to make sure there was some sort of limit on it so you couldn't fully abuse it, but I also didn't want to make it like a strictly once a day thing, like, because I wanted it to be very useful, just not broken. So a lot of the garment grids will give stuff like access to other class abilities, or just like defense up, attack up, and like a lot of them just didn't really, at least I couldn't really think of a good way to translate some of them into Dungeons and Dragons. So I tried really hard with this one. I think it has probably a chance to be a little broken, but here we go. It's the Shining Mirror Garment Grid. It is the Reflect Garment Grid. Reflect in Final Fantasy, basically, when it's on a character, if someone casts a spell on that character, the spell is automatically reflected back. So if you try to heal that character, the character casting the heal will be healed instead. And if someone tries to deal damage with like fire or something, that's sent back to them. So at level 3... the feature is anti-magic, which it doesn't come directly from the game. It's sort of, I just gave it this thematic sort of feature. You get a +1 bonus to all your saving throws. So keep in mind, that's always active. So, these garment grids, you're choosing between these two, and you can see that they have like pretty big differences, and it's stuff that will like always be useful, but it kind of takes a backseat to the other stuff that you can do, you know, in your dress spheres. Also, when you fail a saving throw, when you are the single target of a spell or other magical effect, you can choose to succeed instead. After you use this feature, you must finish a long rest before you can use again. So, not quite reflect, but I wanted to just sort of start this off at level 3 with a little bit of that I can't be hurt by magic flavor, but also not give it something like way too powerful at level 3. But starting at level 9, this is where the fun happens. Reflect. So when you see a creature casting a spell within 60 feet of you and its sole target is either yourself or another creature you can see within 60 feet, as a reaction, you can make an ability check using your primary ability. So this is basically like Counterspell. I took the same mechanics of Counterspell, but instead of nullifying it, the spell, on a success, the creature's spell goes off with the casting creature as the new target. The spell automatically hits if it's a spell attack, or the creature automatically fails any saving throw if applicable. So that's how I decided to have Reflect work. I think that this could be really fun. I did limit it to using it a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all uses after a short or long rest. So again, like Slowproof and Auto Haste, I want this to be a fun tool. I think limiting it at 6 at like high level play, like, isn't gonna, I don't know. It might, this is what I'm saying. It might be overpowered. Maybe I should reduce it and just say you can only do it like twice per short or long rest. I don't know. That's gonna need some reflection. It's gonna require some play testing. Finally, 17th level, you get Auto Reflect. And so when you change into all 4 of your dress spheres within a span of 10 minutes, basically you have Reflect going off for the next minute, without using one of your uses of Reflect. So just for the next minute, if anything casts a spell on you, it's automatically reflected back. Yeah. And, that's that's that. So that's basically an overview of all the work that I did on this class. I think, again, I haven't play tested it. I think that these things are rather balanced, but it was a lot of work, and I would really love to hear from anyone that decides to put this into practice. You must be some D&D and Final Fantasy sicko if you're listening to this. And I do want to hear from D&D and Final Fantasy sickos. So get at me on Twitter or shoot me an email and let me know what you think. But yeah, that was just me going off for an hour or so. So thanks for everyone listening. This was my first spring cleaning, getting an early start. I'm probably going to have a few more coming up. I have a few more things that I want to put more time into that I sort of half finished earlier. So look forward to that. And the next episode I do have already recorded, and it is me and Livy talking about how our campaign ended. So please, please, please listen to that. Look forward to that. It was a very interesting discussion, I think. I mean, particularly the details of our campaign were for sure interesting, but I think also just our discussion of how the story process goes in general, and like what it takes to make satisfying conclusions in D&D was very interesting. So yeah, like I said, look forward to that, and thanks for listening. I'll talk to you later in the next episode. Before you go, I'd like to thank James Roach for the awesome job on the podcast themes. You can check out what he's up to by following him on Twitter at Hamesatron. You can follow RPG Blueprints at RPGBP on Twitter. I'd also like to thank you for listening, and I hope you take a spark of inspiration from this episode and use it in your own creation.